away everything. Oppression is the business of not respecting one's personhood. For my first 2 years, I was the only woman in the law school. They didn't even let me talk.
Thurgood Marshall is talking about Jim Crow, and she says, what I'm experiencing is Jane Crow.
Was not just an amazing lawyer or a badass feminist, but also a queer, non-binary person.
Sitting in front of Murray's notes,
the turmoil and the suffering,
this is a feeling I know well.
Scholars who have written about Polly largely still use feminine pronouns. I don't know what pronouns Polly would say.
Trans and gender non-binary people have always been a part of our American context. So did y'all just think that your generation invented it?
That's a part of the trailer for My Name is Polly Murray. And Julie Cohen, as we wrap up, and for both of you, your remarkable body of work, if you can comment, since the film, what has happened with awareness around Polly Murray in this country?
I'd say awareness of Polly, which was growing already. That's part of what we were trying to document in our film and has been something forwarded by scholars, particularly black women scholars, for many decades. But awareness is growing more. And Betsy and I have been thrilled, and so has Polly Murray's family, to see the name get a little bit of the recognition that it so richly deserved.
We want to thank you both for being with us. We have to leave it there, but I encourage people to go to the hour we had speaking about Polly Murray. Julie Cohen and Betsy West, directors of Gabby Giffords, Won't Back Down.
KBOO Community Radio and the Jazz Society of Oregon are proud to present the 42nd Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Friday, July 15 through Sunday, July 17 at Cathedral Park in North Portland. Jazz, blues, soul, and Latin musicians will rock the park for 3 days. Tony Coleman, Eddie Martinez, Outer Orbit, and Greater Kind are just a few of the 15 bands performing this year. That's the 42nd Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Friday, July 15 through Sunday, July 17, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Smooth mind, floating like a butterfly, notes set afloat, sung like a lullaby, brace yourself.
Good morning. Today is the 11th day of July, 2011. Pardon, what did you say?
I said 7-11. Should be lucky. I mean, you know, hey.
Uh-huh.
7-11.
Oh, 7-11. I see. I'm a bit slow.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess.
It's Monday.
That is correct. And you are listening to More Talk Radio.
Yes, indeed.
I am
90.7 here in the city. 91.9 if you're in the Columbia River Gorge. In the Willamette Valley, it is 104.3. And everywhere else, you can hear us at kboo.fm. Hey.
Excellent. Excellent. And you are listening to Cecil and...
And I'm Celeste. Morning, Cecil.
Good morning. Good morning. It's a wonderful morning. And hope everyone is doing well. We are in the midst of summer months, so everyone is living easy, I suppose, or ought to be.
But are we, though?
Are we, though? Yeah. Ah, the yeah. question.
The, well, among many questions, I tell you. I mean, one of the questions that is foremost in my mind is they're talking about, you know, the return to the high temperatures. And while I like it, I'm wondering if we're going to get what the Midwest and East and Southern states, too, have endured, or we're going to be spared that heat dome experience, you know.
Hopefully.
I'm not interested in cooking chickens out in the field under cans, you know, or cooking hamburgers on the sidewalk. I'm not trying to do that.
Well, you know, I don't want to do that either. And it also depends on where you are and how you handle the weather. Our engineer reminded me when he walked in this morning that I do not have on long sleeves. And those of you who are familiar with the KBOO studio know that it can become very cold in here. So I am not warm. I am kind of cold this morning.
You need some coffee or something.
Maybe
we'll have a hot response to our topics, and that would heat you up.
Oh, segue.
I try. But it's interesting that you want to talk about the environment of the workplace, you know, in terms of just the temperature, because things like that are small aspects of our topic today, and one of our topics, I should say, and that is the way we experience the work environment. Everything is changing right now, and I had shared an article with Cecil, and then we started talking about how different aspects of the work environment that we've either worked really hard to establish or worked really hard to get rid of or just change are changing maybe in ways we didn't expect. I guess I'll call it a mutation, you know. And one of the articles I shared talked about how that streaming... Okay, let me just call the name one time. Netflix, okay? Their work environment is changing in such a way that they no longer care to hear input from the employees about the products that they make. Case in point, and specifically, was the response to Dave Chappelle's various programs, one of them being The Closer. And there was a lot of outcry from various communities about comments that he made in The Closer. But this is not necessarily about specifically Netflix or Dave Chappelle. Cecil and I also talked about how there's changes in the actual physical work environment where you find there's, well, this is kind of a throwback, didn't you say it was, you know, removing the walls and trying to make it a big family? Because that's not really new, but it's one of those things we're talking about, this disappearance. And I'll let you say that part so I make sure I don't mess it up.
No, I think you introduced it very well, Celeste. I think as we talk about the changing work environment and how for many companies, corporations, workplaces, there have been attempts to create a more so-called worker-friendly environment. And that might extend from what may seem to be the artificial barriers that are eliminated by the elimination of walls and private offices, and creating a space where you can go and have coffee and play ping pong or other things like that. And this, I think, is somewhat superficial in terms of trying to create, we are all in this together, and we are one powerful team that work together. There is on another streaming network, which I will not name, a program which is looking at an alternative vision of the space race between the United States and the then Soviet Union. And so they offering of what might have happened. And in their alternative universe, the Soviet Union was the first to win the struggle to place humans on the moon, and it's talking about an attempt to go and land on Mars. And in this, on this series, competing with the United States and the Soviet Union is somewhat of a different independent corporation that is like any that you can name, and you know all the billionaires and their corporation, you know, can list three or four. And in this corporation, the environment is very friendly and so-called democratic, so that decisions are made by the body as a whole, and whether or not we will go to Mars or not, and it goes on from there. Not commenting on the production value of the programming or the acting. What is interesting is this is an attempt, I think, in many of our society to offer a different way of working together, where the executive is supposed to be on the same level as all the other workers. What is absent, and I think is absent from many of the situations today in reality, in the attempt to create a more friendly worker-friendly environment, is the absence of the workers organizing. I do not think that, regardless of how much coffee you have or so-called free time that you have, that unless you, the workers, are organized, that they will always be under the thumb of the boss, regardless of how friendly or the environment may be. And that unless you organize to gain real power, all of these superficial attempts of creating a friendly environment remain superficial because of the basic power dynamic. Now, I might be digressing a little bit, Celeste. What do you think?
Yeah, you went deep, and I mean, it's kind of appropriate, at least now it's said, so our callers don't have to say it. But there's even one more issue, you know, that we want to add to this, because it's layers. You know, nothing is just simple. We are arguing about whether we even want to come in and work in a building. And that's a big concern for a lot of people, because some of them are concerned about infectious disease. Some of them are concerned about the price of gas. Some of them are concerned about the fact that they don't want to live in that area, or already didn't live in that area. And so they want to continue to be remote workers. And then some of them are even deeper concerned about their location, because they may live in, say, Little Rock, Arkansas, but they remote work for someplace like New York City and command a much higher salary than their region would normally pay, and they like that. And so you've got layers upon layers of what it means to go to work these days. And so we were curious, you know, how people felt about this. even given the fact that we're in such a bizarre environment, employment environment, as it is. You know, you hear that the Great Resignation is still having fallout because you still can't find enough staff. I went to pick up some certifications over the weekend, and they told me, no, don't bother to come because we have to close the pharmacy because we don't have enough staff. And this is, you would assume, qualified staff to people who have gone and gotten education and certification, whatever, and they don't have enough. And by that, I mean they're dedicated. So, you know, you spend money to get that certification or education, you're certainly going to work and make that big bucks. But, you know, people are not going to work, so there's shortages. But still, you also hear, on the other hand, which lends to the strangeness, the fact that when people do apply for the job, they will find that maybe the job offer has disappeared or some other kind of convolution. And so basically, we're in really a bizarre, I guess it's the only way I can describe it, just say it's kind of bizarre, our environment. And we're wondering, well, given all of these issues that you had to consider, these factors, where are we in terms of going to work? Is going to work now obsolete? I mean, what is it? What's our plans for it? How do you go to work? Do you even want to go to work? And that's one of the topics that we wanted to ask people. How are they adjusting to this new outlet now? I do want to ask people who are actually in the workforce to call in, you know, because it's their real life experience we want to hear about. You know, we can speculate all we want, but I'm really curious as to how the people who are in the workforce are dealing with it. And that's young and not so young, you know. I'm curious to how millennials are experiencing this, because they get the bad rap sometimes for changing the work environment. But the truth is, we've been working to change the work environment since there was work. You know, a more family-friendly, more compassionate work environment was the whole thesis behind the movie 9 to 5.
Indeed. So give us a call. Let us hear of your thoughts about the work environment, the change in work environment, and how it impacts your lives or the lives of those you live and love or are around. Our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And give us some of your reflection on the work environment and some of the changes that have taken place and that are taking place. One thing that Celeste mentioned, talking about the reality of the fact that more people are working remotely and the impact that has in terms of the work environment, the traditional work environment. There are positives and negatives around that in terms of whether or not people can create a friendly, cooperative work environment when you do not know or see one another, and you may only interact with someone over a computer screen. How does that embolden or weaken creating a solid and healthy sense of working together? What is that like? You mentioned the example of Celeste, of person living in one city and working for a company in another city. It changes things. Related to that is the fact that with remote, and this is something we have touched upon in previous conversations, is that what are the boundaries that take place? if you work remotely, are you expected to be available at all times? Which may be a good or not so good thing, in terms of whether or not you're able to separate personal time from work time, and to how that impact your family life. If many people have experienced this over the last year and a half, 2 years, not only working, but also when schools were remote. What? How does that all impact reality? I said, no, in my work environments, have changed, and sort of like things that we had not thought of, we are now wrestling with. Well, if you all do not have to be in the same physical space at the same physical time, that makes the environment and how you do work different. Something that we certainly had the capacity to do before the pandemic, but we never considered it until we were forced to. 503-231-8187, and give us a call. Now, there are some things you cannot do remotely, like baseball. I guess you can do that remotely, but, and people do it remotely, but not so well. And Celeste, you are muted, I think.
Okay, now we can hear you.
Okay,
I was about to say, it didn't show me it. I was thinking, yeah, you can't do surgery remotely. I mean, we're working on it.
No, you can't. Some surgery you can do remotely.
What surgery?
Well, I mean, by by using, the machines, you can program machines to...
You still have to be, you have to be there.
Well, some surgeries...
They may put you in a bubble, but you're in the presence of the person upon whom you're operating.
Well, I'm not a doctor, nor do I play one on radio or TV. But I have seen programs where, maybe it's because I watch too much TV or movies that,
I'm going to say I don't want any remote surgery. How about
surgery.
That?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, while we're getting our callers all, and excited about dialing in 503-231-8187 here on More Talk Radio on your Community Connection, KBOO. I want to talk about another thing that I talked to Cecil about and sent him some information.
Hold on 1 second, Celeste. We do have a call.
Oh, okay.
And so before we switch, let's hear what Molly has to say. Good morning, Molly.
Good morning, Cecil. Good morning, Celeste. And I thought I'd just chime in, kind of early Monday morning, get going here. And the first thing that came to my mind listening to you is when I was working, and I am retired now, and I was working as a teacher over at Cleveland Teaching Art, but the biggest thing was just showing up is, 99% of the job. You got showing up, just being there. Even when you had a bad day, you really didn't feel like it, but you show up. So there's that human quality of just being there, being the person. Maybe you're grumpy, had a terrible whatever, and people pick up on that, but you're human is the thing. And what I found on the side of being human, on the big aspect of being in a workplace with other human beings, is that you can really make someone's day by just saying, "Wow, your hair looks great today," or "I love that sweater," and people just light up. And so we light each other up by saying things. Sometimes it's the other way around, but somebody thinks, "Oh, wow, they're grumpy today." But the human quality, and I noticed after this, this pandemic of people working from home, everyone kind of likes that being at home, not having to travel and rush hour and everything else, but you lose that human quality. And I think in this day and age, with everything on the internet, that's a huge aspect of being on this planet together. And so that's just a quandary. I'm just throwing it out there to other listeners and people to talk about, of that human quality of working together. I think it's important, you know. And we as teachers know, that was another thing I'll say quickly. You know, we had our own autonomy in the classroom, and that was a feeling of respect, like you're trusted. Whatever you're doing in that room, nobody's big brother's watching you. They figure you're a qualified person, you're doing a good job, you know, as best you can do. Then you might get together with everyone in the lunchroom and have that together time, and all those things are important. You, that privacy, which people in the little cubicles don't really get, that sense of autonomy. Someone's always looking at you. Are you over there working? Or are you just taking a nap or whatever? So balancing those things. I don't want to take too much time, but I like the topic because I think it's kind of an interesting one for this day and age.
All righty. Well, thank you for your call, Molly. Appreciate it.
And thank you for your show, as usual. I look forward to it. Okay.
Thank you so much. Go ahead.
To kind of stimulate some conversation, to piggyback on Molly's point, there's this interesting thing, though, and I am not faulting folks. I'm just calling it out for recognition. There are a lot of people, younger people primarily, so this is primarily a generational thing, that don't really care whether they're working in the presence of another person. I remember living in an apartment complex in Portland, and it was in the area that was designated high access for certain amenities like high speed internet, etc., because it was for the young creatives. And I noticed a lot of my neighbors had problems, like, you know, talking to folks and saying hello. You'd hate say hello to them. They act like they were a deer trapped in headlights and didn't know what to say, you know, and they would almost flatten themselves against the wall and slide by you in fear. Yes. And that's an exaggeration, okay? But the point is that there are surprising a lot more folks who don't care if they engage with you personally. So this remote workplace dynamic works for them. And like I said, that's not faulting anybody or, you know, trying to shame anyone. It's just calling out something that's an obvious dynamic. So for a lot of people, that X factor that Molly's talking about doesn't seem to matter. Now, for me, it matters. I am geared to that quantum energy exchange that happens with people in close proximity, you know, actually being personally there. And I believe that human beings being, among other things, an electromagnetic force generator, they change each other, and they can change each other for the best. Whereas when you're on a conference video streaming call, you can't always pick up on context and emotion with accuracy. And I find that meetings where I have to do that, you know, can be incredibly fatiguing because you're also not looking anybody in the eye. Well, not really. So there's that energy exchange that's not happening. Not only does your voice not affect me as it would if I was in person, because it's been disassembled and reassembled in your house, you know, but I'm not really looking them in the eye. And there's been documented studies, you know, peer-reviewed studies coming out of Zoom fatigue and other types of streaming meeting fatigue. And so there is something to this need for us to actually be in close proximity.
Now let's hear what next caller has to say in response to that, or in response to Molly. Robbie, good morning. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Good morning. I always love listening to the conversation. It's always a great, it's refreshing to hear this, because I think it's a big problem. And one thing I did want to bring up, Celeste, that there is what's called the Da Vinci surgery robot, which the only reason I know of is my cousin sold them. And I'm also highly against the idea of the Da Vinci robotic remote surgery device. Basically, there are people that will have to be around that device, but one doctor from one central location can control however many of those devices remotely from anywhere from like 400 or 700 miles away. But it's funny because the FDA now is putting out warnings about it because of the fatal complications that could happen. But that's besides what I wanted to really talk about. But
okay, thank you. I thought it was a reality, not something I saw on sci-fi.
I mean, I've seen it, but you know, again, they're having problems, aren't they? I think.
Oh yeah.
That makes my point. But anyway, your other point was.
I'm just concerned that this individual. This is by design. I think that they wanted us to be individualized. Everyone, and this is the product of our liberal democracy, which is supporting a capitalist imperialist nation. But basically, what we have here is the capitalist machine thrives on everybody buying their own, and so. In response, you know, and kind of in contrast to that, what you have would be like community work and getting people together and being like, oh, wait, you know, like, why do we have to have, why does everybody have to have a Walgreens on every corner? Or why is there, you know, why does everybody go and buy their own lawnmower when, you know, there's not even that much grass, you know, in certain city lawns here? But, you know, they could all just share if we had that community-based thing, but that's not profitable. And so I think that this is by design, and I think it even goes further. I mean, you know, so like the whole lockdown thing, a lot of times when people got this individual thing, it's bad. It's bad for us. It's bad for us because we are locking down into our own little news bubble, our own little world where everybody else is wrong. And I know, and this is weird because to me, what I see is pseudo-intellectuals, people that have this idea like, oh yeah, I know what's going on, and now they're not talking to other people, and they're afraid of other people's opinions because they don't believe other people's opinions, and it's just this huge cycle of individualism, and it's propelling us down a very toxic path in societal terms. I think we're seeing kind of the reflection with how people are scared now. There's just so much fear, and I guess I'll just leave it at that. I just wanted to bring up.
All righty. Well, thanks for your calling.
Robbie, before you leave, not only did you point out a concern, what is some of your response to this and to counter this individualism?
Well, I still try to force myself. I'm guilty of this too. You know, it'll be a Friday or a Saturday night, and all I want to do is just go home, but you know, I'm trying to force myself to go meet with my friends, and that seems to be something that I have to do is remember to be social no matter how, you know, and the thing is like there's stuff that comes out of that, you know, your beliefs will get challenged, you'll learn something new, and I think that the community part, you know, is a huge part, because when we all turn into that individual, we don't get that exposure. And I do want to say that I totally believe the influence of energies, the realms that, you know, we don't see, like for instance when one plant is infested, it puts out, you know, a warning call. I forget what they call them.
Like SOS. That's right, sure does.
And now
the other plants respond to it as well and help it. That's something that we're missing that you're talking
about. And we may never know what you know, we never figured out the exact science about how important, you know, what kind of fields there are when that electromagnetic current, you know, when we're out there, you know, intermingling with each other. And, you know, and I'm sure there's going to be health, you know, detrimental health stuff that comes out of it. But
great
doomsday thoughts. I love you all. Thank you very much for providing time for me.
Hey, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Robbie, and thank you for making yourself vulnerable enough by sharing how you respond in terms of countering the move towards individuality. It occurs to me, and you are listening to KBOO FM, More Talk Radio, here on your community radio station with Celeste, and I am Cecil. It occurs to me, you know, Celeste and I, we have raised this topic, and one thing about community radio station is a community, and part of the genius of this radio station and others like it is the ability for people to interact with different people, different interests, different concerns, different tastes. And in days long, long time ago, when the station was open and the city was more open, people would be coming in and having a conversation. You have a music programmer talking to a public affairs programmer, different generation interacting with one another. Well, you know, all of that has changed. And to make it even smaller, in on this one radio program, which for years Celeste and I have, you know, gathered together on Mondays and talk with one another in person in the same recording studio, well, that is no longer possible. So for at one point, after things open up a bit, we were allowed to come into a radio station, but we were, because of safety concerns, we were in separate studios. So there was a barrier, a window between us, and we could look and continue our communications. A little bit different, but we were all in the same physical space. Well, now we are doing this programming. I don't know how, you know, we are in different parts of the city, and we see one another because of a video camera. How has this changed for you, Celeste, in terms of how we do radio, in terms of this programming?
Yeah, it's changed for me a lot. I mean, I don't get out much because I'm dealing with a couple of health issues. And so it makes your world shrink, but it can make it, what is the word I'm looking for? It can distill the experience. It becomes concentrated in a sense because it becomes smaller. Many, many years ago, I was doing hospice care I was no longer a nurse at that point, but I was doing hospice care on my dad, and he had had a stroke, and he couldn't speak. And so I really stretched my empathic ability to the nth in trying to figure out a way to communicate with him, with getting on a vibe with him so that I could understand what he needed. And I was amazed after he had passed how much my world had shrunk, because it was just he and I. I had to push so much out of my life so I could have that tight laser focus on him and interpret his smallest gesture, you know, yes, accurately. And I think that's kind of what it's like for me right now. So much of my world has kind of shrunk. And when I do get out, it's nice, but then it's like overwhelming, mm-hmm, you know, because it's like all these little empathic feelers are out, yes, because I'm not normally out, or I'm trying to adjust to the subtle changes in this really rapidly changing community that we live in now, you know, with the panic that people are going through and financial uncertainty, et cetera, et cetera. Right. And so it's both a blessing and a curse. It's like being able to watch eagle nests somewhere in a forest or another country far away in the top of a tree because of a camera. Uh-huh. But you're, you know, way across the world. But, you know, enough of that. I liked what I was hearing from our callers, in that they recognize that there is an extra dimension to communication, hmm, and teamwork that, you know, in communication studies. I remember back in the day when I was still studying it, well, I guess I still am, there was this phrase about group communications where you had your storming period where you get to know folks, storm, norm, perform. Okay, I forgot one of them because there's four steps. But storming is when you first meet each other and you're in a bit of a chaotic communication dynamic and you're trying to figure out your styles and personalities and everything, and you're not getting a whole bunch of work done. The norming period is when you start forming communication standards and norms and metrics, et cetera, et cetera, and perform. I know I left one of them out, and I did look it up really quickly. But that's what's missing. Mm. You know, one of the reasons I say that is the real-time element of our communication and the quantum data and quantum energies that we exude is it's changed. It's not enhanced. It's some kind of way deconstructed when we're meeting so much not in person. You know,
yes.
We're meant to be in close proximity with each other. When we're in a room with each other, we're breathing each other's essence. But anyway, we want to hear the essence of your thought.
Uh-huh.
The phone number is 503-231-8187. Our topic has digressed and changed a little bit. But, you know, the point is we're talking about working in today's work environment. What does that even mean? In some places, your input is not important, and they don't care to hear what you have to say about the product you might be making. And in other places, you are expected to be able to be satisfied with the culture that they put together, even if it's harmful or not. Give us a call.
Yes, and feed us your information and sharing. I thought one thing was interesting, Celeste, as we talk about the changing work environment, and a couple of callers talked about their experiences and how it has altered. Our first caller, Molly, was a teacher, and she shared something about her experience there. And Robbie also shared some about his experience and being forced to, at the end of the work week, to, you know, make space for other people. So let's hear what others have to say. Let's hear with the words of wisdom from Harry. Good morning, Harry.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Word of wisdom. I just read an article on OPB.com that the new corona variant is increasing, and they expect a lot more infections and hospitalizations in 3 weeks. So the coronavirus is not over yet. So, I mean, I know everyone thinks it's over with, and they want to go back to work, and I think maybe it's going to be too early. There was also an article in Virginia that the state of Virginia asked all people to come back in to work, and 300 quit because they didn't want to go back to work.
Right.
So, yeah, I just wanted to bring up that coronavirus is not over with, and well, hopefully this uptick won't be that bad, but they're saying the infections will be like what it was in January. And if you remember in January, we were up to 2,000 people dying per day. Right now, yeah. It's only 360. So it's just something they have to really bring up. Is everyone
yes.
ready to really go back to work?
Well, yeah, and as you mentioned in terms of the rates of infection, and, you know, certainly here in the Tri-County area of surrounding Portland, rates have increased, and, you know, the recommendations, because that's all they can do now, because, well, we can have these concerns later that if you are inside of a inside someplace that you ought to be masked, and so yeah, it has certainly altered the way we live and interact with one another. And so what does that mean when people want to communicate and be with one another, and you know, health be done away with because I want to be or need to be with people?
Yeah, that's true. So anyway, thank you. One last thing, for I have a question for Celeste.
Yes.
Celeste, you mentioned that you were actually in the Air Force, so you took so you went to target practice with the M16, correct?
No.
You never did firearms?
We did. I was cadet in the Air Force. We did our firearms training with, get this, a Colt 45.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean,
now,
a Colt 45
and one of the reasons was,
is a very
One of the reasons was, generally, if you're enlisted personnel, you will have different types of firearms training. At that particular time, because I was cadet and an officer, we didn't do all of the different weapons. And if I had been, there's two kinds of cadets. You could be like the military, West Point, et cetera, Annapolis cadet, or you could be ROTC cadet, Reserve Officers Training Corps. And I was a ROTC cadet. I was going to journalism school at Mizzou at the time. And so that's what we had with the Colt 45.
I know the military switched to a 9mm, but you had a Colt 45, and it's a beautiful weapon. Did you ever want to own one?
Yes, I've been shooting since I was a kid.
Okay, so do you own a 45? I mean, you don't have to put bullets. You can throw it at someone like a boomerang,
I would not throw a Colt 45 at somebody like a boomerang. It wouldn't come back. Mm-hmm. They'd catch it and run. Well, no, I don't own a gun, and I've waxed back and forth. You know, if I have a yen for target practice, I still have my slingshot and my arrows. But I wax back and forth, but I don't see any need for an assault rifle to go hunting. I'm not going to do anything but bring back hash.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for taking my question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And if you have an opinion about our topics today, and it may veer it off a little bit about, but that's okay. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. The workplace, how are you surviving? What changes have taken place? What things do you endorse, embrace, and what things do you reject? And give us a call. Let us hear your thoughts, 503-231-8187. And whether or not you if someone has actually been operated on by this Da Vinci surgical robot, that would be great to hear.
I mean, maybe they had a good experience, and I'm going to leave it at that. Yeah. I hope so. I hope it wasn't a bad experience.
I hope not.
So, you know, we've touched on a number of things with this whole idea of what is a work environment anymore, and the fact that some of the challenges are still in effect, like coronavirus, and so people are trying to make decisions that this time it makes sense, you know, or completely in their self-interest, you know, or paramount. And when it comes to dying from a disease, I'm right there with you. Like, I'm gonna do what's good for me. But it's not even all about coming back into the work environment because you don't feel safe. There are people who can't even afford the gas money, and there are companies, in a desire to be friendly and supportive, have offered to pay some of the gas money, you know, for employees. And so we're trying to figure this out, and there's lots of articles to say this whole concept of hybrid work environment is doomed. And so for those of us who maybe want to come back in, is all of this uncertainty a deterrent, you know? Or are you going to do the full speed ahead? I want to come in and work. How are you going to work out the work situation?
Well, let's hear from our callers. Let's go to our first caller, Tuwasi. Good morning, Tuwasi.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to take a moment and say thank you for bringing up this topic. It's super important. You know, scientists just recently came out and said that we should change our concepts of finance, because our current idea of what it means to make money is dooming our planet to a carbon climate that will make it unlivable. So, you know, with that said, indigenous cultures typically work about 20 hours a week to cover their needs for food and shelter. You know, cultures that don't sustain themselves off of capitalism, just like my ancestors did a couple hundred years ago here. Mm-hmm. If you just live in a backyard economy where you bring eggs to your neighbor and they give you baskets and your other neighbor does blanket weaving, and then you don't end up having to go to China and exploit third world people so you can have whatever it is that you think you need. Anyway, you know, just from an indigenous perspective, what we look at as work is actually exploitation. And the fact that banksters are the ones who capitalize on our human value, and the same banksters are the ones who capitalize on fossil fuels and the privatization of water, it's just horrifying. So what I would love to do as free work is plant trees, and the dysfunctional city government of Portland doesn't want people to plant trees. I don't know if you saw that news article. They can't figure out how to let people plant trees. So, you know, it's past time for us to abandon work for money and start choosing work for wellness. Because when we work for wellness, then all of those money concerns of are we making enough money to risk our lives, that starts falling away. Anyway, appreciate the show, and I hope you guys can do more to bring indigenous viewpoints to this type of topic. So, hey, anyway, I'll listen up here.
Well, thank you so much, Tuwasi, and for offering a different way in which to approach this topic. So, working for money or working for a way of increasing the ability to be in community. Let's go to Felicity, who is waiting. Good morning, Felicity.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes. I just wanted to bring up the shift toward self-employment or contract work. And this is a really big issue because people who work as contractors don't have access to a lot of things like meal breaks, rest breaks, workers' compensation, paid time off, sick leave, a lot of the benefits that come with employee position.
Yes.
And to me, it is concerning that it seems like a growing share of the workforce is now contract workers without a lot of the same protections.
Right.
Another issue is that contract workers typically cannot unionize. And so that kind of limits the contract workers' ability to, like, try and secure protections,
yes,
in their workplaces to the degree,
yes,
that they can.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, one of the problems we're dealing with, and Tuwasi made the same point, is what our idea of work is and the value of it. And truth be told, all of this is working out well for, you know, capitalistic working goals and objectives, and not so much for work for well-being. Because it's hard to get a job where you can actually work for well-being and get those benefits that we need, like health care and parental leave, et cetera, and so they're happy that we're fragmented like this, because, like you said, it's harder to organize, and they're happy that we're working fewer hours, because then they make up excuses why they can't pay benefits, you know.
Yes.
And so I don't know how we reverse the process, because it's based on it's not just based on capitalism, it's based on human greed. People are earning more money than they even have any concept of and know what they could spend it on, and they don't care about the well-being of their fellow human being or the one that's working for them making all this money. And so what are we going to do, you know? And we need new strategies, because we keep coming up with the same ones. And while organizing is still effective, the problem might be with the way organizers work, or the way employees respond to it, or the way the employers respond to it. And we need to figure out some new dynamics and strategy.
Yeah, I think one thing that we are discovering, and I appreciate Felicity by pointing out the concerns of those who are contract workers and the challenges they face, and how, like you just reminded us, Celeste, that for owners, it's working out gloriously for those folks. One of the things I do see is, as you suggested, finding new ways in which to organize, and we are witnessing that in terms of younger millennial-based workers who have often contract workers who do not have that experience of secure 40-hour job with benefits, and remember things like pensions, but that's a distraction, but not really. But I think what we are discovering are ways in which some of these workers are organizing in a new way here in the Portland region, and throughout we see the organizing of workers for working in different coffee shops and how they are organizing. We've witnessed in one company here in the Portland area, the workers of a fast food restaurant and how they are organizing. And they're using different methods. You know, the old days of the union coming in and telling you this is what you need to do is maybe effective in some industry and not as effective in others. And what we are seeing are new ways in which people are gathering strength, finding their voice, and being able to stand up to power. Because, you know, regardless of how friendly the owners smile at you, they remain the owners. And until we are able to organize and meet power with power, our voices are not heard.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Well, we have a few minutes left. I have 8:56. Is that what you have?
I have 8:56, and
okay, we got like maybe a minute or half.
8:55 and 25 seconds, according to our engineer.
Okay, well, we're going by Ray's time. Hats off to our magnificent engineer Ray. But as we wrap this up, you know, there are a whole bunch of things I wish we had more time, at least another half hour, to unfold. Because I want to talk to Wathi's point about getting what you need and indigenous ways of survival. You know, those have been challenged all the time. I used to spend a lot of time up in Anchorage and other parts of Alaska, Fairbanks and what have you. And subsistence hunting was a big deal. And what we had problems with is when a lot of wealthy and predominantly white men would come up and want to do sports hunting and fishing, and then limit how much the people who had subsistence hunting rights could take home to feed themselves. And it was sad. I mean, that was such a big issue, and I'm sure that, oh gosh, what is the Alaska governor's name? I can see it, Sarah Palin. I'm sure during her time there, she was part of the problem in wanting to do away with subsistence rights. And so it's that systematic dismantling of more wholesome and sustainable practices that have put us in this state we're in. And so it's not just greed for money, it's greed for resources. And so it has changed the way a lot of us can live, because folks have gone over into these other countries and taken other cultures' productivity and destroyed it and reconstructed it for their own benefit. So, you know, we really have to come up with some new metrics, paradigms, and dynamics, ways of doing things, if we want to survive.
Be certain.
Yeah,
we certainly do. So let's continue to do that and find ways in which we can. Those of you who are listening live, stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour. Patricia Kohlberg hosts this episode, which includes segments on land and language in Indian country. Let's stay tuned and continue to be informed. Until next week, Celeste, any words of wisdom for those who are listening?
Well, you know what? If you can, there is a movie that came out back in, I want to say, the early 2000s, late 90s, and it's called The End of Poverty with a question mark on it. The End of Poverty by Philippe Diaz, Philippe Diaz, Dias. Watch that. And that can give you some ideas of how we could conceivably reconstruct our micro economies, if nothing else. I'll give you that.
Thank you, and stay tuned.
Find people.
See you next week.
We'll see you and hear you next week.